golfers, get ready to elevate your Saturday mornings. Yeah, it's Brian Murphy here, and I am thrilled to introduce the Clubhouse Corner with Ben and Eddie. This is a passion project from the good folks at the Clubhouse in Fremont. These two are on a mission to make golf accessible and enjoyable for the masses. So set your alarm. 7 a.m. every Saturday, join Ben and Eddie at the Clubhouse Corner. Only on KNBR.
The journey of the Cactus League through all 162 begins now. Welcome to the 2023 KNBR Giants Fan Fest at Oracle Park. Presented by Scottsdale, Arizona, your home base for spring training. Now we take you down to the diamond for our live broadcast with your host, FP Santangelo, on your proud home of Giants baseball.
There's a long drive to right. It's headed for the bay.
KNBR 104.5 and 680 AM.
That one is wet.
The sports leader.
All right, FP Santangelo here from FanFest, having a good time in the rain. The tarp would be on right now. It looks so weird to see the field behind me in puddles because you usually don't see a baseball field like that. There's usually a tarp on it, but there's puddles all over the infield. But everybody's still here. It's nice to see everybody out the ballpark. I'm joined by three awesome Giants. The newest one, Mitch Haniger, is here. Mitch, welcome, man.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, man. How's your day going so far? How is this for you?
Been awesome. Been a lot of fun to meet all the new fans that getting used to. And been excited to be here, get to know some of the teammates, and, yeah, pretty pumped.
J.D. Davis joins us. J.D., you're from the 916, local guy. What's it been like for you playing for the Giants so far?
No, it's been a dream come true. Just to be this close from home and just to experience it with a hometown crowd and just, I guess, the family and friends when I grew up. So I'm looking forward to the season. I'm excited for this group.
So are you living in Sacramento in the off season? Where are you staying now?
So in Phoenix, actually, just in Scottsdale.
So you totally ditched the 916, whatever. But no, I understand why baseball players live in Arizona. There's a lot of reasons why you should live in Arizona. Alex Cobb, we just did the kids' Q&A together. You were awesome.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Kids ask the best questions, don't they?
Yeah. I was expecting more along like favorite color type of questions, and they drop some good ones.
One kid just looks right at him and goes, "How much money do you make?"
Yeah.
So we had to tiptoe around that one a little bit.
Yeah.
I told him to Google you. It's public knowledge, right?
Yeah.
So Mitch, new organization. You know, congratulations on the deal and the new contract and being
Thank
a
you.
Giant, first of all. What's it going to be like for you, you know, with new teammates kind of blended into a new clubhouse? Are you worried about that, or are you just like, yeah?
I'm excited. Just looking forward to get to know the guys. I think the first step is getting to Arizona, getting familiar with everybody, and trying to build a personal relationship with each guy, and ultimately win a lot of ball games and win a World Series.
Yeah, you're 2018 All-Star. You were 11th in the MVP in 2018. You had 38 doubles, 26 home runs. But then the 39 home runs in 2021. Then you've been through some tough times with injuries. We all go through it as players. You're healthy now, and you have to be excited about playing at 100% for the first time in a while, right?
Definitely, yeah. I'm excited to get to Arizona, like I said, and get started. And I know I've added a lot of good players to the team, got a lot of guys coming back that are really good, so I'm excited.
JD, 2019, you hit, I got the stats right here, 22 homers for the Mets. I watched you play 19 times a year with the Mets, and I love the way you go about it. I love your approach at the plate. I thought you might be a little frustrated with this ballpark because I know that when you're locked in, right center field is your deal. Like, you got some serious pop the other way. Did Triples Alley get you yet? I mean, did you throw any helmets because of Triples Alley yet?
A little bit. That one that I hit against the Dodgers, I think last year in August or September, got oracled. It stayed in the yard or one hop the wall and ended up getting a double. But if it stayed in, then it would have been a perfect Triples Alley and we would have been taking the lead. But there's been a couple that Longo has messed with me last year that, you know, hitting that right center gap and just getting run down by either Bellinger or Varsho from the Diamondbacks. So I'm not intimidated by it. I stay to the right center. That's my power and that's where I am. So, you know, it's going to be fun to really push the envelope of this this ballpark and see if it holds me.
Talk about like getting consistent at bats versus playing like once or twice a week. You and I talked about that, and being a former bench player myself, like when you start getting in the lineup, you start seeing fastballs, you start to get a rhythm at the plate. In New York before you got here, you weren't playing a whole lot, and then you got here and you started to play. Like, talk about the difference as a player from Yeah, almost playing every day to playing once a week.
So, I think maybe Mitch can not necessarily relate, but as a hitter's perspective, when you see pitches over and over again, you start picking up release points, regardless of whoever it is on the mound, seeing different shapes. And so if your brain is catching up to the game, you're able to, catch up physically. So when you're playing every 2, 3, 4 games, it's more so you're just trying to get your timing back for the first two at-bats and then hopefully, get a third or fourth opportunity without being platooned or being subbed in. So during those times, I was really relieved coming over here and just getting those opportunities, those at-bats, and that helped me stay locked in and just, again, pick up the release point. I think that's the main thing, and seeing the ball a little bit longer.
You can slow the ball down when you're playing every day. And for the Giants, even if you're not starting, you might be in the fourth inning.
Yeah, which is perfect.
you never know, so you're always getting reps, which is cool. Alex, you and I talked about the new rules this year. I want to talk to all you guys about that. I still really don't even know them. I probably should, but I don't really know them technically yet, and I'm sure we're all going to find out as we go. The pitch clock for a pitcher, you work fast. And you try to slow it down sometimes with runners on base, I noticed, but you generally work quick because you want to keep your defense engaged. How's that going to affect you, say, you're going for a complete game, you're one out away, bases loaded, bottom of the ninth, two outs, and the pitch clock is running, and maybe you just want to take a deep breath because you're at pitch number 105?
Yeah, I wish I had an answer for you. I don't know yet. We're going to fortunately have some games to try it out in spring training. But I think that the overall philosophy for us as pitchers is to use it as our benefit. I mean, the great thing about being a pitcher is you're in control of the game. You try to put the hitter on the ropes. And I think that this is going to amplify that even more. They have to be in the box relatively quick. They get one step out per plate appearance, I believe. So we're going to dictate it, I think as a staff we're going to use that to our advantage. So they took too much time to get in the box originally. So if this all gets the games within 2.5 hours and I'm in bed by 10 every night, I'm all in.
Yeah, I think we all are.
Yeah.
So you hear terms like the game's really sped up on me. Or, in our whole lives as players, we try to slow the game down. Like to think between pitches, right? Like he threw me this, and this. I was right on that. I fouled it straight back. I'm getting back in the box, and now I'm looking for this. Are you guys going to have time to do that as hitters this year?
I hope so. Like you said, I don't really know. We don't know what to expect, so we're going to go into spring training and just try to learn and adapt and adjust. And I think at this point, that's all you can really do.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. Okay, you guys are being politically correct right now. Do these new rules suck? Or are you guys down with it? Like, literally, like, come on, nobody's listening
I'm
to this
truthful.
Show.
If it gets us done in 2.5 hours, I'm in. I also, like we talked about earlier, I was so tired of second-guessing shifts and thinking what could have happened if we just shift the right way and the difference that the outcome of the game would have had, that it's all gone now. Like there's going to be 4 infielders and they're going to be 2 on each side, and the cards are going to lay where they will. But I think that all of them at once is a bit aggressive, but I do like the majority of them.
So talk about that for a second. I've talked about this for years. Like, you make a great pitch. It's a 14 hopper to short. You think I'm out of the inning. You turn around, nobody's standing there, and 2-run score. Like, you executed your game plan. You pitched to weak contact, and you look, and the ball's rolling the outfield, and you're backing up bases all of a sudden, thinking you're out of the inning. Like, what kind of psychological effect does that have on a pitcher when that happens and the shift isn't where you want it to be?
Yeah, it's infuriating. I mean, it was a major way to, we talked about earlier when all of this is on and the lights are on and the fans are on, we don't notice any of it because we're so locked in on the movement we're trying to create, the mechanics that we're trying to execute over and over again. And then something like that happens and you can't think of 2 things at once. So you start shifting your mind to why were we playing a guy like that, and you're on the rubber and you're thinking about how angry you are and you can't wait to tell whoever's in charge of the shifts like what you thought about that. And then before you know it, this guy's doubling off the wall on you and another guy's rounding the bases and you're like, I don't even remember throwing that pitch. It just was so caught up in the moment that I wasn't thinking about executing pitch. So hopefully that puts that to rest a little bit. You know, we are the ones that are in control for the most part, and we can, you know, just move on from that thought. But when things do go wrong, we're going to just have to, whatever our mechanism was before to, you know, take a breath, get those negative thoughts out of our mind and reset, we're just going to have to do it quicker. You know, the clock starts when we get the ball, so, you know, maybe have the catcher drop it a couple times and, you know, maybe kick it. Yeah, there's going to be some gamesmanship going on.
Shenanigans.
For sure.
I love shenanigans.
Yeah, I think you get to ask for a new ball a couple times, so.
There's so many loopholes. How are they going
to? Yeah, maybe I'll have to sneeze, you know, like, I don't know. It's all umpire discretion.
Awesome stuff. The voice you hear is Alex Kopp, Giants pitcher. Mitch Haniger, newest Giant, joining us. J.D. Davis sitting in. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about shenanigans. You were here at Giants Fan Fest on the Esports League.
Golfers, get ready to elevate your Saturday mornings. Yeah, it's Brian Murphy here, and I am thrilled to introduce the Clubhouse Corner with Ben and Eddie. This is a passion project from the good folks at the Clubhouse in Fremont. These two are on a mission to make golf accessible and enjoyable for the masses. So set your alarm. 7 a.m. every Saturday, join Ben and Eddie at the Clubhouse Corner. Only on KNBR.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see, good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So I mean, that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Here on The Leader, we're making it official. Baseball is back.
Goodbye! Out of here!
Welcome back to the 2023 KNBR Giants Fan Fest, presented by Scottsdale, Arizona, your home base for spring training. Now to prepare you for the season ahead, here's your Fan Fest host, FP Santangelo, on KNBR 104.5 and 6.8, The Sports Leader.
All right, welcome back to a rainy Oracle Park. I don't think the heavy stuff's coming down for quite a while yet. I mean, the infield's underwater, but I can't believe you guys are still here. So standing ovation to everybody still in the ballpark. You guys are amazing. I think it's the hardcore Candlestick Giants fans that are still here right now. And a great turnout here at the ballpark. I'm with newest Giant Mitch Haniger, Alex Kopp, J.D. Davis. We're just rapping about baseball. Maybe you guys just start talking to each other. I mean, I'm running out of material here. We have about 40 minutes left.
I literally just met this guy 5 minutes ago.
What do you think so far?
He's cool. Yeah. I've heard great things.
Dude, everybody's cool in spring training, right?
Yeah, I've heard good things about it.
We'll see August. We'll see how he is in August.
See when he's like having a little scuffle.
Yeah.
No, but talk about that. Like that's how we used to measure good teammates, right? Being the same dude every day, and it's so hard to not be a happy hit guy when you have a good game and we lose. It's so hard when you go out there and you know, throw seven scoreless, but you lose at the ninth inning. Or so hard when you hit a clutch home run, but then all of a sudden you lose a game. And I played with guys that were really good guys when they were going good, but when they weren't, they were hard to be around. So like one of the best qualities of a good teammate is they're the same guy every day. Are you guys like that? Is it hard to be like that? What's the process like to be the same guy every day in the clubhouse?
I think you hit the nail on the head for me. I just try to be as even keel as I possibly can. For me, I kind of heard players talk about that coming up, and I tried to have an identity, and for me it was like, all right, I'm not a high energy guy, and I'm not like really low energy guy, but how can I just be kind of like smooth sailing all year? And that's the goal, is just to kind of come in every day and my teammates know what to expect out of me. And like I said, I'm not really a high energy rah-rah guy, but I'm not too quiet. I feel like I'm pretty personable, so just try to get to know my teammates and be there for the guys.
You're a fierce competitor. You're a hard worker. I've read all about you, but you don't have to be a rah-rah guy. You can go out there and lead by example, right? So if you're that kind of player, how do you go out there and lead by example every night?
I think it shows in your preparation, how you show up to the field, the work you put in, and for me, like you said, lead by example, right? The best players I've been around are guys that like went about their business the right way, and they rubbed off on other players. You hear a lot of guys talk about things they do, and said, for me, it's always just like, just show it. I think it's easier. It's harder to show it, but that's what's most important.
Who was that guy? Who was like the guy in the clubhouse when you first got called up that kind of broke you in the right way?
For me, Kyle Seager, but he was great. He always took me under his wing and talked to me about, you know, everything, helped me learn about the game, about life. And then, but I would say watching a guy specifically was Nelson Cruz. Like, his routine, his work ethic was second to none. And true professional. So for me, when I got to Seattle and I got to watch him and how he prepared, I'm like, that's what I want to be like.
Are you ever just a let's effing go guy in the dugout ever? Like,
oh, for sure. Yeah. I think when the time's right. Yeah.
Timing's everything, right?
Yeah.
That was Mitch Haniger. JD Davis, you seem like a super chill, even keel guy. I feel like at least outwardly, you have no high highs and no low lows.
I just try to keep it even keel. I think it's just like off Mitchell says, one of the big things that I've learned is not to make a mistake or compound a mistake into another mistake. And I think a lot of guys, especially when they go up to the minor leagues and go up to the major leagues, if they have a bad at bat or strikeout, they'll carry it on to the defense. And I think that's a huge thing as a teammate, is that wise, because all of us in that clubhouse and even the guys on the other side of the line know this game is about about failure. So I think it says a lot about you as a person, as a teammate, and how you carry yourself through failure and through success. And just like what Mitchell says with Nelson Cruz, like I've had a few guys, and regardless if they went 4-for-4 with four home runs, they had the same routine. If they went 0-for-4 with four strikeouts, they had the same routine. They're the same guy in the clubhouse, same guy in the dugout, and just makes things a little bit more lighter for everybody.
Yeah, two sides to the game, lumber and leather. I always just say, if I ain't hitting, you ain't hitting. Go out and take some hits away from somebody, right? Maybe you win the game on defense. Okay, Alex, I'm going to try to say this nicely because I just met you about an hour ago. I feel like you're a high, high, low, low guy. Just from watching you on the mound in the course of a game. I've never been in a clubhouse with you. We've never showered together. But I feel like watching you in the course of a game, you show your emotions. You wear them on your sleeve.
I get pissed sometimes, but I don't get too happy, which is not a good motto for life. You know, like I'm never like really too pumped about an outing. You know, if I feel like with pitching, if you go six shutout innings, you just did your job. But if you go out and throw three innings and give up five or six, you really let everybody down. So, you know, I kind of thrive off of it, though. You know, I like the pressure of that. I try not to show too much emotion. I get a little upset if I don't get a call here or there in a big moment. But, you know, I let it happen, then I breathe through it and get it out and move on. But in the locker room, in this game, you kind of have to be the same guy every day. You're not allowed to show up and have an attitude and ruin my day because you're having a bad day. Those guys get weeded out. It's part of the developing process, just like, you know, learning your craft of whether you're swinging a bat or throwing a ball. You have to learn how to be a good clubhouse presence. And if you're not, then you get that reputation in the game, and it's going to be hard to come by jobs. So you learn how to handle adversity and success equally. And you know, just I always tell the younger guys, like, you don't get to take my happiness away from today because you're upset about something. So fake it. You know, if you have to fake it. If you have to go into another room by yourself for a while, go be by yourself. But let's not bring the mood down in the clubhouse.
This is great stuff, man. I get deep. I'm into the mental side of the game big time. Mm-hmm. Like, I read the Carl Kiel, Harvey Dorfman, Mental Game of Baseball. I had it in my bag highlighted every time things didn't go well. So when things aren't going well on the mound, and maybe for you guys when you're hitting or on the field, do you have a way to reset? Like a mental way to reset, like take a deep breath, look at some key in the ball. I used to find like a palm tree or something and look at it, and I could let everything go. I would find one landmark in the ballpark if things were going south or I wasn't doing what I needed to do to kind of reset and get back locked in.
I just have a constant analysis going on in my mind of my delivery. So every time I throw a pitch, the ball's giving me information back of what I did over the rubber. And so usually my mind is just set on that. You know, I'm taking a pitch and I'm collecting the data of what it did, how the hitter reacted, and I'm implementing that in my delivery. And you know, when things aren't going well, I feel like I try to lock into that more because I need to fix it. You know, I need to I've I'm not going to be out here very long if I'm not making the adjustment. So I just keep trying to go over that in my mind and fix whatever errors I find.
Mitch Haniger, Andy McKay is a good friend of mine, and he works for the Mariners, and he's big into the mental side of the game. Do you incorporate anything like that, like goal setting, breathing, visualization before the game, during the game? Like, how do you go about it from the mental side?
Breathing for sure, visualization for sure. I think I found it to be really positive and beneficial to kind of try to see good things happening before they happen. Maybe these guys might be able to relate, but I think sometimes you go up to the plate, you're on deck, you're walking to the plate, and you're just like, I'm getting a hit or I'm going deep, and it happens. And it's like, okay, well, why did that happen? I think you're putting yourself in a positive state of mind, and you can kind of influence things as weird as it sounds. And we're not feeling good, your brain's stuck in, like, fix it, what's going wrong, I'm trying to diagnose things. And so keeping your mindset, like, expecting good things to happen and trying to see good things happen, I think is really powerful. And for me, it's just the breath work, right? Things start speeding up or things aren't going the way I want them to go. I try to lock in on my breath, slows the heart rate down, and, just lets you play free.
Have you ever had a moment, I had this happen maybe like two or three times in my career, where you visualize something and it happens exactly like you visualized it, and you're running around the bases going, yeah, no way, dude, this is like
no
a
way,
dream.
Yeah, definitely.
Like exactly the way you saw it maybe in your hotel room at 2 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the afternoon with your headphones on.
Yeah, and then I'm like, why don't I do this every single
day? Yeah, exactly. Like, if I could bottle this and sell it, like I'd be a billionaire and I'd be in the Hall of Fame. JD, like what's your approach like to the mental side of the game?
So a little bit of like what Mitch said, mine's big on the breath, but a little bit more detail. I believe in breathing through the nose instead of a mouth breather. I think the brain gets a little more oxygen and the body relaxes a little bit quicker. Mentally, I've been working on is how I think everybody can relate. It's how to deal with failure, how you can analyze the situation, and think of it more of an opportunity to gain feedback and how to approach the next opportunity. That's what I think. We all get away from and we get to that negative side point of view and thinking about what I should have done or what I could have done differently, kind of being that critic to yourself. I think it's kind of that balance where you've got to be a fanboy for yourself and also check yourself and be a critic. So a little bit off that, just how to deal with failure and think of it as more of an opportunity and how to approach the next situation, because it's game. I mean, you get 10 opportunities, and if you succeed 3 times, you're in the Hall of Fame. So it's how can I approach the next situation and be successful in that one.
Well, I've been married twice, so I feel like if I get married the 3rd time, I'll be 1 for 3 and I'll be in the Hall of Fame. So, no, that's good stuff. We should get a couch here. We're getting super deep, but I like to get deep talking about baseball. I think the fans love to hear this because they think we just show up at 6 o'clock, take a couple dry swings, you warm up, go out and play, but like there's so much more that goes into one single baseball game. Like, and it's all this, the mental side of it. When it's such a grind for 6 months, you have to find a way to mentally prepare yourself, get ready for the ball game, and then just play. Just when the bell rings, just go out and play and not get in your own head. JD Davis, Mitch Haniger, Alex Cobb, nice enough to join us. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we're going to talk about Scottsdale spring training, maybe what you guys think for the upcoming season. You're listening to Epi Santangelo. We're here at Oracle Park for FanFest. These fans are hardcore fans sticking it out in the drizzle right now. You guys are the best. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to KNBR 680.
Hey, it's Brian Murphy here, and whether you're orchestrating a corporate gathering, gearing up for a team-building session, or just seeking a spot to savor thrilling sports and activities, the Clubhouse in Fremont is the go-to destination for bistro, bar, bocce, golf, and fitness. From team-building to private golf lessons on any one of 140 golf courses around the world, the Clubhouse in Fremont has you covered. Visit FremontClubhouse.com to learn more about their amazing amenities and private events. The Clubhouse in Fremont, the Bay Area's place to play.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll.
Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
The first Cactus League game is 3 weeks from today.
Time to warm up with the leader.
Our 2023 KNBR Giants Fan Fest continues. Presented by Scottsdale, Arizona. Your home base for spring training. Now back to your Fan Fest host, FP Santangelo, on your proud home of Giants baseball.
Go on to the opposite field.
KNBR 104.5 and 680 AM.
Another Giants home run.
The sports leader.
All right, welcome back to Oracle Park. Trying not to get electrocuted on the stage right now as the rain keeps coming down. Lots of Giants fans here. It's so good to see you guys. It's so good to be back at the ballpark. It's spring training right around the corner. During the commercial break, I hope you guys don't mind me saying this, you guys are catching up, saying, like, I played against you on a rehab assignment, and then you faced J.D. Davis, Alex, when he was a Met. Maybe you could share those stories. Fans love this kind of stuff, like what you guys were talking about during the break.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize that. 2013, I was with the Rays. I was on a rehab assignment. He was Brevard.
What
team is that?
What? Brewers.
Brewers?
Brewers
Yeah, I was, I mean, no reason, no offense. He's probably a good hitter, but I was just trying to get some pitches in and go home. But, you know, he was just he was being kind and saying that I've done well against him throughout
our
careers.
He's got my number. He's got my number. I'm glad we're on the same team.
Yeah, but and then it just made me think in my head. I didn't tell him, but I was like, well, I scout very hard. You're the three-hole hitter, you know, for a very good lineup. So we're spending most of our time on you. And then I thought about JD and how I faced him in New York, and he was batting 168-ish at the time. and I just kind of threw his scouting report off to the side. You know,
wait, how does that make you feel, JD? Just like it threw your scouting. I know that feeling. That's what guys did to me. They're like, hey, this guy sucks.
Well, I was greeted with a very well-hit ball that I thought I threw a pretty good pitch on the inner half, and I probably had 110 exit velocity straight to my third baseman's glove. So I got him out, but I was like, what? That guy doesn't hit. That's not a 168 hitter, you know? That was, and, you know, we talked about luck in this game a little bit and things that you can't control. I mean, the guy crushes the ball. He hits the ball extremely hard, and he can't help if, you know, there's a guy standing there on the other side that catches it. But what best 168 hitter I ever saw.
JD, if you had to get on the mound right now, how hard could you throw?
Oh, man.
I know you get asked that a lot. You got a good arm. You were a pitcher. Wait, at Fullerton?
Yeah, Fullerton.
You were a pitcher at Fullerton. And when you throw it across the infield from third, you got a cannon. Do you think you could throw harder than Alex if you got on the mound?
No shot. I probably can't pop 90 right now. But I did pitch earlier in my career, and I topped out at 93.1, I think it was. Oh. So I was pretty stoked about that.
You're what, 95?
Just last year. I mean, before that, it was pushing my 93 was pushing it for me.
Would you rather throw 93 with, like, tons of sink, or would you rather throw 96 and blow it by somebody? Less sink.
I think 96 looks cooler.
It does. Yeah. Strikeouts are sexy, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've been told. Front offices like them.
Do they really?
Yeah, that's all they care about now.
Don't have to worry about the shift when you strike them out.
Hey, I'd love to get your perspective on the pitch clock. I think it's going to bring back more of a mixed guy, put the ball in play early. Do you agree with me or no?
Why?
Because you don't have enough time to regain. Like, some relievers take forever. Relievers are the worst as far as the time pitch clock goes. Starters are good.
Get on the mound.
This pitch
dude.
Clock is mostly for the relievers, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I think you're going to see, like, a guy kind of like a Mike Leake guy. Like, mixes. And also, because the pace is faster, you might get more soft contact because hitters are a little rushed.
Yeah.
Typically, if you rush a hitter, it's more beneficial for a pitcher.
So yeah, I wonder if the shift will have more of an impact on that. You know, guys
just trying
will be
to get
swinging
the ball
more.
Play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know about that. About I hope so. I mean, I love the art of pitching. And early in my career, pitching was taught. You know, you mixed speeds and you mixed location in and out. And then something happened halfway through where it was like, these guys would come in and say, don't worry about location.
Yeah, it's not important anymore.
Don't
worry about it. Just throw as hard as you can this location.
At the top of the zone.
Only throw this pitch 80% of the time.
Yeah, throw this 80% of the time and then throw this.
And then they won't come visit you in the hospital when you have Tommy John.
Oh, no, they'll just bring the next guy up to do the same thing. But it just wasn't fun to watch. I mean, it was like I would talk about it in the outfield with guys. I was like, explain baseball to me now, to a kid. What are they trying? What's that guy trying to do? What that guy trying to do? And before, when you were playing, you had all sorts of beautiful hit and runs and things to talk about. And now I was like, you can boil it down to this. That guy's trying to throw as hard as he can, and that guy's trying to hit it as far as he can. And that's baseball. And I think that with all these rule changes, we're trying to get back to the beauty of the game. And the fan watching on TV wants to sit with his buddy next to him and say, this is what this guy's trying to accomplish right now. Let's see if he gets it done. Let's see if he lays the bunt down. Let's see if he gets the runner over. Let's see if this pitcher can disguise this pitch and keep the guy from swinging or whatever. And I think the game just needs to get back to that. And it's a beautiful game when it is done like that. And it's just very basic, and you know, there's not much intricacy to it if we're doing what we were doing.
No, I agree. It's the three true outcomes, right? Strikeout, walk, home run.
Mm-hmm.
I was broadcasting back east, and I had a scorecard that for three innings was either a home run, a walk, or a strikeout. There was like two home runs, and the rest were walks and strikeouts, and nothing else.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you guys this. You guys are both power hitters. You guys can hit it out of the ballpark. Does the fact that there's no shift next year change your approach, change your swing? Because I've seen a lot of little guys in the last, like, 4 or 5 years, you guys chase the money. The money's in OPS, the money's in driving and runs, the money's in hitting home runs. So without the shift this year, I feel like, and I could be wrong, you guys can help me out here, that the line drive and the ground ball are going to be back in play. You guys hit the ball at the ballpark. The fact that there's no shift, does it change your approach at all, or are you just going to keep doing what you were doing?
I'll let you answer first.
A little bit. I think it helps me out a little bit. I'm more of a guy that has a knack, or as a power hitter, has a knack for getting hits. I like to stay up the middle for it, and I remember recalling probably about more than a dozen balls being scolded up the middle that were taken away from hits. Even same as the 5-6 hole where the shortstop's all the way over. I think it's going to bring back more of that, just like what Mitch says, more of a contact hitter. Guys are going to be able to not necessarily manipulate the barrel, but however, if a guy has the ability to control the barrel, I think he is going to have success with less of a shift. That way the more holes will open up, and the ability, just like what Mitch and Cobb were talking about, the soft contact and everything, where a guy, if he has a good swing and a good line, and he holds his, he's able to flick the barrel up the middle or over the shortstop or in that 5-6 hole where now we're not shifted over. So I think it's going to help out a lot of guys, particularly in my case, where, you know, if I'm hitting the ball hard on the ground and there's more holes, then they're going to find, or the ball is going to find more holes. So I'm all for it, and I'm excited for it. So to answer your question, yeah, I think so.
That was J.D. Davis. Mitch?
So I've thought about it, and I would say slightly, because I feel like the shift was brought in to take away hard hit balls. They position these players where you're hitting the ball the hardest, and that's why it takes away hits. That's why it's valuable for a defense and for a team to shift players. It doesn't really provide the weak contact. So I think, like, most of the balls that we're hitting hard up the middle, like your whole life, that's a hit. Now, for these last, you know, 5 years, it wasn't a hit. I've lined out where a pitcher's falling down and the second baseman catches it. Like, you'd have a 110 up the middle and it's an out. So I think there's going to be certain pitchers where it's a little bit more beneficial, like, hey, let's just keep it simple and try to hit a ball hard on the ground, because it's probably going to find a hole now. And for me, the name of the game is always just trying to get a good pitch and trying to hit the ball hard. I have, like, a general direction of, based off of the pitcher scouting report, where he likes to go and where, like, kind of my hot zone is. And I have a general direction of where I want to hit the ball. And I don't think that's really going to change, because even with the shift, that didn't change for me. Like, when I had a guy playing, you know, two guys basically playing shortstop, and I wanted to get this guy to left center, it wouldn't change because there's two guys there. The whole goal for me, hit the ball hard. I don't control anything that happens after that.
Well, that's good stuff. Talking to Alex Cobb, Mitch Haniger, J.D. Davis. If you're just jumping in your car, we're sitting out here in the rain at home plate at Oracle Park. Okay, you guys got to help me out with analytics. I'm old school baseball. I'm starting to come around to it. I realize it's part of the game. I realize if you're an organization and you don't get into analytics, you're left in the dust right now. So my question for you guys is, I always say on the show, like, it's hard to fall. Oh, you almost got drenched right there, JD. I always say it's hard to fall in love with math. Like, nobody ever said, oh, I can't wait for math class. So I think a lot of the fans right now are seeing how analytics are implemented into the game on a daily basis. And kind of what you said, It's like there's the hit and run and the bunt and the intricacies of the game that maybe we'd stolen base that we haven't seen before. So how much do you guys implement analytics into your game? Like, I'm going to start with Alex Cobb. Alex, you go first, and then we'll just go around. Like, are you big on analytics? Do you watch the spin rate? Are you into the velocity, or you just go out there and pitch?
I love it when it comes to pitching. And I didn't early on because I didn't know. Like, I didn't know what any of it meant. But as I've been taught what I do well, you watch the golfers warming up.
Yes.
And they have their track man right there.
Yep.
We do that now in our bullpens. And we throw a pitch, and we can see the exact measurement of spin access, efficiency, carry, everything you want to know about the pitch. And then you can try something a little bit different over the rubber and see if it has an effect, or loosen the grip a little bit, see if it has an effect. And, I mean, how can you not love that? I mean, it's helping you perfect your craft. I hated it on the field. I despised hearing things like we don't value double plays as much as getting somebody in position to get one out. Because as a pitcher, I'm in the situation dictated what I'm trying to accomplish on the mound. And so you're right. I mean, you had to do it as an organization. And I felt like every year was another guinea pig of a year where front offices were trying to experiment with new thoughts that they came up with in their, you know, their meeting room over the course of the offseason. And we were the guinea pigs that had to try it out with our careers. And I just didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy the way the game was going. I think that hopefully this is going to kind of right the ship a little bit.
Interesting stuff from Alex Cobb. I love it. So I would be mental if I had all that information at my disposal. I feel like it would just lock me up, and you build condos in your head, and it's like paralysis by analysis. You're saying it was a valuable tool in the bullpen.
Yeah.
But when you got out to the game, like, let's let it fly. Let's go.
Yeah. Scouting reports get a little tricky. You can totally overanalyze. And I when we go over scouting reports, we have nine guys of pages of information on each one. And I see guys taking notes of, you know, the eight hole. And I wasn't joking when I say I saw a 168 hitter and I kind of put it on the side. Because you just can't remember it. Like, I'm not that smart. Like, I don't have that good of a memory. So what I like to do is I like to have a safe zone for each guy. Big situation behind the count. Where's my safe zone to go with this fastball? What's my safe off speed pitch to go with this type of swing? And just leave it at that and really just pick out a handful of hitters. The fortunate thing about pitching is I control the outcome by my execution. If I execute one of my three pitches well, it's going to have a quality result most likely. So I try to keep it simple and let the flow of the game dictate.
Yeah, I feel like your stuff moves so much, dude. If you're thinking in pitching, you're in trouble because your stuff moves so much. I feel like you got to pitch to your strengths, not the hitter's weakness. And why? Maybe you over scouting report too much and you're all locked up. Just do your thing.
Yeah, spend that mental energy on figuring out how to make that pitch move like that at its best over and over again. And I feel like you'll have more success.
Mitch, I'm guessing. I don't know. I feel like you're big into the analytics, no?
I wouldn't say big. Definitely go deep in scouting reports, but I think my approach at the plate is extremely simple. I take all the information, and then during the game, like, I go over every guy in the bullpen, every starter we face. And then, you know, when guys come in from the bullpen, I like to watch the video real quick to get a kind of build my library in my head of, like, what his pitches are doing and where he likes to go. And like he said, he has a safe zone where he's trying to go. I'm trying to know where their safe zone is or where they're going to try to throw me, and then make my plan accordingly. Where I'm trying to hit the ball is according to where, you know, where they often are. For instance, if a guy's a big cutter guy, right-handed pitcher with a good cutter, and he's always cutting the ball off the plate, trying to get me to chase away, I might crowd the plate a little bit, and I'm also looking for that ball closer to me so I stay off the one he wants me to swing at that ends up outside.
So you're just doing your homework, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. I mean, there's so many guys you're going to face that, and there's so much information that could be a benefit, but at the end of the day, I think you have to take all the information in and then keep a really simple thought when you go up there and just let your give your brain a simple thought so that you can execute it. I think if you're constantly thinking, okay, he goes 2-2 count 20% of the time. You throw his fastball and 35% of the time throw slide. You're screwed. Like,
you're so screwed.
Some people do that though, right?
Yeah. I mean,
some
people. You guys know guys that you have to.
I know guys that sit on pitches depend like just purely off math of like what he throws. I don't really like doing that, but it works. I know one guy it works for. He's really good.
So. Dude, we used to just go, hey, what does he got? And he'd be like, sinker slider. Okay, thanks. And then go hit. This is so great that you guys have these tools at your disposal if you need them. I would imagine it's just like an all-you-can-eat.
You got to know who you are, too. Some guys can't take in a lot of information.
Right.
That's fine. And then I think the really good organizations don't try to shove it down certain guys' throats, right? There's certain guys like, hey, I don't really like it. Let me know velocity and pitches that he has, and that's it. Fine. Go hit. Just depends on who you are.
You can't think and hit, though, right? I mean, you can't. It's by you if you do. So you do your homework. You get a good thought in your mind. You go up there, look for a pitch, sit on it. Do you ever, like, the little man in your head in the middle of an at-bat, and you change your game plan? Like, you got a good game plan. I'm going up there. I'm looking fastball away. I'm going to drive it into triple's alley. And then all of a sudden, it's 0-2, and you're fighting, and your game plan's just out the window? Or are you a guy that just sticks to the plan no matter what every at-bat?
I think for each at-bat, I stick to it. But there's times where during a game, I go, okay, I'm not getting this pitch, right? I'm not getting any fastballs in the zone. So there becomes a time where you're a fool if you're continuing to look for it when you're not getting it.
Right.
The key of the game is to make adjustments. So I was always told, look for the pitch that you're probably going to get, not for the pitch that you want to get.
Right.
So I think that's a big difference between that. But also knowing your strengths. When I was facing him, I'm not going to look for a splitter because even if he throws it in a good location, I'm not hitting it.
Right.
So trying to get a sinker starting up in a way that bleeds back over the plate, and that's my best chance of smoking a ball, and I didn't do it very often. But, yeah, he did good.
That's good stuff from Mitch Haniger. J.D. Davis, what do you got? Like, what's your approach on analytics, your thought process?
I'm big and I'm not too small. I like to process things, how they go about the season. You can look at it at a surface level and look at the percentages of who throws what, but talking to the analytical guys, I'm a big guy on what's going on over the last 2 weeks or his three appearances. I think everybody gets away with, we're all human and everybody wakes up differently on the bed. Some days, you know, I played with Cobb. Some days his splitter's not working. I want to know that if I'm going to face him. I want to know over the last three starts, you know, his splitter, you know, yeah, he may have used it 40% of the time, but of that 40%, you know, 10% were strikes. So I'm just like, all right, how can I make this pitcher today into a two-pitch pitcher? I know it's easier for relievers because most of them are two-pitch guys, but a starter, you're going to get three cracks at him. So I think bringing them down to two-pitch, kind of like what Mitchell was talking about, how to approach it and how to find a pitch that you're going to do the most damage on. If it's the slider, if it's a two-seam, get it out of the plate. Kind of like what you said, there's a little bit of a happy medium where, you know, if you're struggling throughout the whole entire game, I've been on the other end of it where I didn't stick with my plan and I missed a fastball my third at bat and I'm kicking myself, like, why wasn't I disciplined and, you know, trust my instinct? And there's also times where, like Mitchell says, you know, you're dumb to keep looking for that pitch even though you're never going to get it. So I think the big thing is what we talked about earlier is slowing the game down, being aware. And I think that helps us out dissect and come together or bring in those numbers and not feel overwhelmed. Because there are guys like that you give them a whole page of analytics and they're sitting there, you know, having a brain fart because they're not good with numbers. So I think everybody's different. I can kind of collect a bunch of information and put it together as an approach, but I'm also similar one of those guys that I don't need 9 pages to really look at a guy.
Yeah, I used to overthink it a lot, like the guy on deck struggling, I'm locked in, 3-1, base open, no way I get a fastball here, and it's a four-seamer right down the middle.
Yes.
And you're like, what? Just see the ball, relax, and don't overthink it. All right, We got about 6 minutes left, so you guys are heading to Scottsdale, you're ready for a new season, Giants fans are ready for a new season, they're out here braving the cold to listen to us idiots talk right now, so props to those guys, you're getting ready to go to Scottsdale, like, how do you guys approach a new season? Like, it was always overwhelming to me, going to spring training and thinking about 7 months, 162 games, we're in a tough division, we're with the Dodgers and the Padres, our team looks good on paper, we made some good improvements, one sitting right here at the table with us right now. What's your thought process, Alex, Mitch, JD? I'm going to ask you one at a time about how you approach a new season. Are you guys fired up? What are your thoughts? What are you thinking about a new year? Just go one day at a time.
Well, it's never hard to get excited for the season. You know, you got the energy going. That rides you up until like a month, a few weeks before the All-Star break, and then you start playing for that All-Star break. And then you get done with the All-Star break, and you're like, all right, I got like 6 weeks till September, and then it's like serious time, playoff push time. And you hope you're making those playoff pushes. And if you are, then it's not hard to get through the season. It gets long when you're out of it, you know, come post All-Star break, and you're just trying to grind through the end of the season. Kind of similar to what we did last year, come September was challenging. So that's motivation, you know, to stay in it as long as you can. And, you know, expanded playoff teams have helped with that. But there's little check marks that get you through the season.
Are you a goal setter?
No. No, I never have. I mean, I think my only goal and the one that I really want to accomplish is staying healthy. I mean, it's just I've only done it a couple of times where I haven't gone on the IL throughout the season. So,
well, we don't even talk about that.
Yeah, no.
We don't speak that into existence.
But that's my goal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my
good,
goal.
Good. Mitch, I forget what the question was. Oh, are you excited about
the spring training? Yeah, I'm excited. Every year for me, it's like New Year's hits, and then it's like, oh, man, I got to start packing soon. By this time of the year, you're late January, early February, I'm ready to go. I feel like I'm just kind of killing time this last week before you head to Arizona. It's never hard to get excited, like Alex was saying. So, especially, too, is never excited when you're on a team that you know is going to be in it and that's going to be running for a World Series. I've been on teams where we're heading into spring and we're like, we don't have a shot in hell of winning a World Series, but let's have fun. Like, it's kind of like, you know, it's not a good feeling. So it's pretty cool seeing a team, you know, being on a new team, being on a team that's added some really good talent, having a lot of good guys come back. So I'm pretty fired up and excited.
That's good. We're fired up to have you here. JD, like, what's your thought process as we get ready for the season to start?
No, I'm excited. This group of guys is great, great clubhouse guys, great players on the field. This is going to be my first Arizona spring training, so it's definitely going to be different for me.
Oh,
so,
you're going to like it. I'm sure you've heard a lot.
Absolutely. So yes. I'm excited for that and just to get, I mean, obviously better weather for Arizona. Just get acclimated with it, and this is going to be, you know, first time in 2-3 years for me where I'm coming in fully healthy without the delay or without, you know, a hand injury and stuff like that. So I'm excited. And just the opportunity to, again, play in my hometown. And, you know, it's going to be a fun year.
How has that been? I mean, is it hard that people like hitting you, your sixth grade biology teacher hitting you up for tickets?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, from all the way back from high school and middle school, I still get messages from everybody. So
you guys got to pay for tickets now. We used to just, like, leave 25 a game at Candlestick.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they were free back in the day. You guys got to pay for them now, or at least taxes on them, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, like, when I first got here in San Francisco, it was overwhelming with, like, I grew up here. I grew up a Giants fan. And the first month of the season, everybody wanted tickets. And finally, I just said, I had my parents take care of it because it was super overwhelming. Yep. So, you got the Dodgers. We got a couple minutes left. You got the Dodgers and Padres in your division. Do you guys even care about that, or is it just take care of our business and see where it happens? I mean, do you think you guys can compete with those teams with all the moves the Padres made? And I feel like they're owned by El Chapo. They spent so much money in the offseason. I don't know where they're getting their money, but that's a whole other story for another show. So you're in a tough division. How do you go about that?
I don't know. I mean, you just play the game that's in front of you, and I mean, you don't scoreboard watch and stuff like that until the very end. But you just play the game that you have to play that night. It's a boring answer, but you know.
So I think the best team on paper typically doesn't win the World Series every year. So it doesn't really matter, right? Like how good your team is on paper coming into spring training doesn't really have that big of a benefit. That's what you want, showing up to spring training going like we're the team to beat. But I don't think at the end of the day, when I look back growing up and watching these Giants World Series in, you know, 12 and 14, they weren't the best team on paper. They won World Series. And I think that's the way it is on every team that wins a World Series. There's technically a team that might have been a little better than them on paper.
Mm-hmm. I think we're leaving it on that. We're leaving it on that note. I mean, because in 2010, nobody around here expected the Giants to win the World Series. 12 the same way, 14 the same way. So you can't win a championship in December and January, in my mind. You win it in August, September, and October, obviously. I can't thank you guys enough. Alex Cobb, Mitch Haniger, J.D. Davis, you guys were awesome. You guys, give these guys a round of applause. They're out here catching pneumonia for you guys. All right, you guys, thanks so much. Right, I appreciate it. All right, coming up next, Bill Lasky is going to be on the main stage. Bill to the main stage. Bill Lasky to the main stage. Tyro Estrada will be here. The Rogers brothers will be here. So thanks for listening, you guys. I'll see you guys from 6 to 10 p.m. on Monday. It's been nice to be out here at home plate for my first Fan Fest. It's been a good time. We'll see you on Monday night. You're listening to KNBR 680, the sports leader. The sports leader.
Golfers, get ready to elevate your Saturday mornings. Yeah, it's Brian Murphy here, and I am thrilled to introduce the Clubhouse Corner with Ben and Eddie. This is a passion project from the good folks at the Clubhouse in Fremont. These two are on a mission to make golf accessible and enjoyable for the masses. So set your alarm. 7 a.m. every Saturday, join Ben and Eddie at the Clubhouse Corner, only on KNBR.